Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets and love will steer the stars.
The age of Aquarius has hit middle age. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up a little later in our show, we'll have live music from Welsh rocker Griff Rhys, a member of the Super Furry Animals, and actually kind of a hairy guy. Hair is very much on our minds on Soundcheck this afternoon, because this weekend, the Public Theater will put on a weekend of free performances of Hair at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park, marking the 40th anniversary of the show that went on to change American musical theater. But should we trust the show now that it's way over 30? Is Hair over the hill? We're joined first by one of the creators of the show, Jim Rado, who co-wrote the production back in 1967 with the late Jerome Ragney. Jim, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So why do you think Hair is still relevant, and why are people still interested in it now 40 years later?
Well, first of all, Hair is not over the hill. Hair is forever young. But actually...
How about you, Jim? Are you forever young?
I'm hoping. It seems so, because Hair is always happening in my life, and I'm sort of stuck in that era.
Well, what was... I mean, the message of the play, it was very youth-oriented, so that still speaks to you 40 years later.
Did you say euphoriant?
No. Very youth-oriented. Youth.
Oh, youth-oriented.
Yeah.
Yes.
I should mention Jim is on the phone with us from the Delacorte Theater, where this series of shows is happening. So, I mean, you know, the counterculture, the love story between the two main characters, the whole idea of dropping out. How much of that message still resonates today?
Well, that was a very honest expression of what was going on at that time, and... I think it's a valuable thing to have people who weren't even born then to have them be able to see, a slice of that period of time. We documented it. At the time when we wrote it, of course, it was actually happening in the streets. We created a story. We created a play about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very much, the war was raging in Vietnam. Today, of course, we have another conflict.
The fact that there is this kind of unfortunate similarity in where our country is at, does that add a kind of a layer of resonance to Hair these days?
Well put. I think it definitely does. I really, you know, it's very hard for me to be that objective about... how people feel about it. I know that when I see Hair and it's really working, it becomes a very emotional experience. So I had that experience the other day when the actors were having what they call the sits probe, and they were just sitting and singing all the songs, coming up to the microphones and singing this with the band for the first time. It was actually a thrilling experience, and it was very moving. So there are overtones in the material that definitely resonate for now, it seems.
And yet, as you put it, it was a kind of a slice of life. You were documenting something that was happening on the streets, on the campuses, throughout our country in 1967. And, you know, times have changed, whatever else has not. There is certainly a lot of difference between the younger generation now and the generation of the 60s. And, you know, it would seem that you run the risk... You know, when something is that specific to a time, don't you run the risk of it eventually becoming kind of kitschy later on?
I would rather think of it as a history piece now. It's a history play with resonance for today. And by the way, this particular decade, the youth of this decade, I feel are more closely aligned with what was going on then, because there's a lot of activism and... By the way, lots of long-haired people around. the hairstyles have come back, which I think is a kind of flag, is a kind of statement in itself, you know, for the freedom and for the, I'm sure, the new thoughts of today.
We're speaking with Jim Rado, who co-wrote the original production of Hair back in 1967. This is from the 1968 original Broadway cast recording of Hair.
This is 1968, dearies, not 1948.
1968!
What have you got?
1968.
May I ask?
What the hell you got, 1968? That makes you so damn superior.
And gives me such a headache.
Well, if you really want to know, 1948... I got life, mother. I got laugh, sister. I got freedom, brother. I got good times, man. I got crazy ways, daughter. I got million-dollar charm, cousin. I got headaches and toothaches and bad times too, like you. I got my hair, I got my head, I got my brains, I got my ears, I got my eyes, I got my nose, I got my mouth, I got my teeth.
I Got Life is from the original Broadway cast recording of Hair in 1968. The show opened 40 years ago, 1967. Jim Rado and Jerome Ragney co-wrote it. Jim Rado is with us on the phone from the Delacorte Theater, where the free weekend performances begin tomorrow night, all at 7 o'clock, and details are on our website at WNYC.org. Jim, I understand you actually grew up on Rodgers and Hammerstein, on musicals of a very different sort. In writing Hair, you guys created something new, the rock musical. Were you aware of what you were doing, you know, in the sense of creating a new form at the time?
Oh, absolutely, we were. And, I was a devotee of the musical, the American Broadway musical. I knew all the musicals of the past, and that particular era, 1967, well, we were writing it actually in 64, 65, 66, and 67, and I think we began writing it in 65, actually, and that era was very experimental from an artistic standpoint. There was lots of stuff happening at the museums, and Jerry and I were all going to see the cutting-edge kind of artwork that was being done, and then there were the experimental theaters, so these experiments in theater that we witnessed, we wove that style of presentation into our writing.
Mm-hmm. And what about the sort of old form musicals? What initially appealed to you about them, and then what sort of led you to this kind of reaction to it in Hair?
Well, I really love them. I love the music. I love the. I learned to write songs actually from listening to Rodgers, to you know, Hammerstein's lyrics, and I loved Rodgers' music and other composers and authors of that era. And I just was in your late teens, you're very you latch onto something, and that was the music I latched onto. This was pre rock and roll, of course.
Yeah.
And then the rock stuff started happening, and my vision for the show before we met Galt McDermott was to really bring something new to the Broadway stage, bring the pop sound to the Broadway stage.
Now, Galt McDermott was the composer. You and Jerome Ragney did the lyrics and the book. And what was that based on? I mean, was it simply a kind of capturing of the mood of youth at the time, or was it more of a personal story for you?
Well, it was something we made up, actually, it came to kind of represent Jerry and my own life, I guess, our relationship, because Claude and Berger, who we played, were very close buddies. It was a story of friendship and the kind of deep hippie friendships that existed in that era, so it was a new kind of expression of a male-to-male relationship, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Without it being a gay relationship, it was a strong, you know, and there was a lot of physical contact, and amongst all the males in the company and all the hippies, that was sort of one of the signature behaviors, you might say.
Right.
And the women too, you know, it was all very friendly and huggy and touchy and feely and very sincere. You know, it was spiritual with that physical side to it. That was something that was so appealing to the hippie thing. It wasn't just all talk or something or all dress. There was a physical substance. There was a camaraderie and a friendship and a physical side to that.
We're speaking with James Rado, who co-wrote the production with Jerome Ragney back in 65, 66. It opened in 67 with you and Jerry, as you say, starring in the two lead roles of Claude and Berger. And in a moment, we're going to open up the phones and we'll ask you, you know, do you care about the return of Hair? Was Hair a part of your musical life growing up? Do the social issues it addresses still seem relevant today? We'll give out the number in a few minutes, but right now, joining us on the phone is Elizabeth Wollman. She's on the faculty at the Department of Performing Arts at Baruch College and is author of The Theater Will Rock, a history of the rock musical from Hair to Hedwig. Liz, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, thank you.
So what do you think of Hair being resurrected after 40 years? I mean, is it too bound to its historical period?
I don't think so. I think that there are parts that are. I think some of the topical language, some of the slang has really sort of gone by the wayside, and maybe some of the numbers, like the initials number with LBJ, things like that may not resonate immediately with a younger audience. But I think that there are certain aspects of it. The overall message is one that's very meaningful, I think. And I think that also some of the songs especially have really sort of transcended their time. I mean, I remember distinctly seeing when I was a little kid, like seeing, learning, Good Morning Starshine on Sesame Street, for example. So I think that the score really has resonated and sort of stayed and entered into the popular culture lexicon in a way that,
In the way that Rodgers and Hammerstein songs did.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although, as you say, there are some parts of the play, some songs that are a bit more problematic because of the way they are tied to things that were going on. For example, the example that you gave is this song called Initials. That is the song Initials from Hair, and the 40th anniversary of Hair being marked with a series of free performances this weekend at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park. We are going to start taking your calls in a moment. Our phone number is 212-264-7483, 212-264-7483. What does it mean, the 40th anniversary of Hair? Are we just stuck in the 60s, or is it a sign of something really enduring? We are speaking with Jim Rado, who co-wrote the Hair production back in 67, actually co-starred in the original performances, and with Elizabeth Wollman from Baruch College's Department of Performing Arts. And Liz, we were talking a moment ago with Jim about, you know, the fact that he and Jerry did know what they were doing in creating this new rock musical thing. It wasn't just a new form, though, didn't they? They were sort of changing the way theater was made, didn't they?
They were, certainly from a Broadway perspective, absolutely. It was, experimentation was going on off Broadway. Off Broadway was a relatively new entity. There was Broadway, then there was off Broadway, and then things by the mid-60s, even earlier 60s, got so experimental that even off-Broadway was kind of not experimental enough. So then off-Broadway was created. And there was a great deal of experimentation that was going on well beyond sort of the 42nd Street, the Times Square area. And Broadway was actually kind of stagnating, whereas all these really interesting, fascinating ways of making theater were happening downtown and mm-hmm. in church basements and just in sort of different creative performance spaces.
And Jim, that's what you were telling us before, right? That you were sort of aware of all that stuff that was going on off Broadway.
Yes, we went to see a performance of a play called Phut that was directed by Tom O'Horgan, who we had never heard of before, but it was at the La Mama Cafe on 2nd Avenue, and we went to see it, and we were blown away, and we looked at each other and suddenly said, gosh, could this be the director that we want for our show? And it turned out he really was.
All right. Well, we can pick up the story in a moment, but the story continues 40 years later as the Public Theater presents the 40th anniversary concerts at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park, free tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday at 7 p.m., details on our website at WNYC.org. We're back with Jim Rado and Liz Wollman and your calls in just a moment. And coming up later in the show, Welsh rocker Griff Rhys of the band Super Furry Animals explains the title of his song Gira Gira Gira, what it means in his native Welsh language. And that coming up later. This is Soundcheck.
Gimme head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, steaming, flaxen, waxen. Gimme down the fair hair, shoulder length or longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair.
And there are just so many great tunes that came out of this musical Hair that have become part of our culture. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up, the hairy musician behind the band Super Furry Animals steps out for a solo performance here in our studio. But right now, we're talking about the 40th anniversary of Hair. And speaking with James Rado, who co-created Hair 40 years ago. He's on the phone with us from the Delacorte Theater, where this weekend's concert performances take place. And Liz Wollman from the faculty of the Department of Performing Arts at Baruch College is with us on the phone as well. And so are a number of our Soundcheck listeners. And we're going to start right off with actor Robert Aberdeen, who is on the line with us. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you.
So I understand you actually tried out for the original cast.
Yeah, I was in the original Hair on Broadway at the same time, and I kept getting called to go down to the Public and dress like a hippie. And I thought at the time a hippie was like a yuppie, and so I put on a three-piece suit and tie every time I went down to audition. And about the fourth audition, they said, don't cut your hair. And I got a Peace Corps commercial and a callback for the fifth one, and I went in and said, you cut your hair. I said, yeah, I had a Peace Corps commercial. He said, well, thank you very much. But so, I have a question. You know, mm-hmm. back then, I've never been quite clear about the law. There was a nudist musical on Broadway either before or after Hair or something. But the law was, I think, that you could be naked on stage if you didn't move. And so that's what they did with Hair. Bam, everyone was naked and didn't move. And then that changed somehow. What was the law and how did it change? Did Hair, you know, precipitate that change?
Interesting question. And James, I wanted to ask you sort of generally about the whole kind of sensationalist aspect to the marketing of Hair, the nudity and the language and stuff. Can you speak to Robert's question, first of all, the specifics of that law?
Well, when we came to Broadway, we had the idea for two guys to get up and take off their clothes off Broadway, and Joe Papp didn't want to hear about that. That was impossible at his theater. So when we moved to Broadway and we had a different producer, different director, different cast, we brought up the subject again. And this time they checked the books at City Hall, and evidently there was this ordinance or whatever you want to call it on the books that said you could be naked on stage if you didn't move, as Robert Aberdeen just said. But later on, he's right, there was the production of a nudist, it wasn't a musical, it was a play that had been written by a nudist in the 30s, evidently. And it, so somebody found it and put it on. And
wasn't O Calcutta on Broadway at some point or on some stage?
Yes, that came soon after.
Liz?
Yeah, that opened off Broadway in 1969.
Okay.
There was lots of nudity off Broadway. That was another big thing that was going on at the time.
You guys really opened a Pandora's box there of stuff that could suddenly happen on stage. All right, let's take another call. Joe joining us from the East Village. Hi, Joe.
Hey. You know, I really feel bad to be like the voice of dissent, but I got to be honest. To me, it sounds corny and dated. And I really can't believe it's this famous. You know, a couple of good songs, but some of that stuff you played earlier, man, I was just cracking up.
You mean like Initials, the
yeah.
LBJ and the LSD and all that kind of stuff?
God, what is that? You know? Sorry.
Well, were you around? I mean...
No.
Okay, so this is a generation before you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, I'm sort of like the punk rock generation, and just hearing this stuff, I just can't believe it. I mean, but then again, I'm not a fan of rock musicals. I think it cheapens both rock and musicals for the most part.
Well, and I mean, I want to get Liz to weigh on this because she literally wrote the book on rock musicals. But Jim, what do you? I mean, you must hear occasionally from people who feel as Joe does that it's a period piece and that time is gone.
Well, I don't know if he's saying that this period piece. I think he's saying that he never would have liked it, even in the beginning. I'm not sure.
Good point. What do you think, Liz?
I think that it's a matter of taste, and it is in certain ways. If this is not something that you grew up with or that you knew about, I think it's funny. I mentioned to my students in a entry level, a musical theater, not musical theater, music appreciation class the other day that I was going to be on the radio, and that it was about the 40th anniversary of Hair, and they thought I was talking about Hairspray. They really like did, you know, a lot of them had not heard of the musical Hair, and then one of them said, "Oh wait, isn't that war play? It was about the war." And I was like, "Yeah, that's it." So, you know, I think that. But then again, I know people of the same generation that grew up loving this stuff and know all of the lyrics and have the CD, and you know. So I think
their parents who liked it. They played it for a lot of kids. I found it.
Well, Jim, this weekend's production includes a number of young Broadway stars, Jonathan Groff and Karen Olivo from Spring Awakening and In the Heights, respectively. When they did they know what they were getting into?
Oh, yes, they knew, and they wanted to be in it, so I'm glad to have them aboard because they're quite wonderful.
All right, let's take another call. Suzanne here in Manhattan. Suzanne, what do you think of Hair?
I think it's an underrated classic. I actually saw the original production when I was 10. And I was the coolest kid in my fifth grade class.
Man, were you ever 10 years old?
Yeah, because I saw those naked people. But I do think it's an underrated classic for these reasons. First of all, there are songs that have become classics. The lyrics are great. The melodies are great. The subject matter is no more dated than, in a sense, slang. And there's nothing like a dame in South Pacific or Guys and Dolls or Oklahoma or The Sound of Music. It's just there seems to be like a cultural kind of shame or phobia of what the idealism of the 60s, because so much of it got commercialized and kind of inculcated in a way that people are now very liberal and narcissistic, but they're not attached to ideals in the same way. So they're sort of embarrassed by the joyful idealism of the musical. And that's what's so beautiful about it. It's so joyful. And there's songs about pollution that are still relevant today. And the comment about the song about the LBJ, you know, if you know a little bit of history, that's not so hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Sound of Music is about World War II. So I think it's a great musical, and I think it deserves as much attention, and there's a lot still to extract from it. So that's
all right, Suzanne. Thanks very much, Liz. Certainly, Hair has made inroads well beyond the theater into our popular culture. I mean, songs like "Age of Aquarius," "Let the Sun," "The Good Morning Star Shine." I mean, all these songs that really a lot of people grew up singing without knowing they even came from Hair.
Right.
What does it say about the enduring nature of this production, of these songs, rather, that even divorced from their original context, people know them and love them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it says a lot, and I think that that is, I mean, I think any production, anything is going to date, some aspect of it is going to date eventually. I mean, there's going to be some little thing, you know, just the way the costumes were, you know. I'm always amazed at Star Wars and how great Star Wars is, but Princess Leia does kind of look dated nowadays,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
like just, you know, like it still holds up, but... So, of course, there are wonderful messages, and those people that follow the history of musical theater, I would say that it is certainly as much a classic and belongs in the canon of musical theater as much as, for example, a Rodgers and Hammerstein piece. But, you know, that's not to say that, I mean, there are aspects of Rodgers and Hammerstein that are a little dated, too. That's okay. But I think that the... You know, overall, the piece is certainly relevant and certainly classic. And, you know, I mean...
Do we hear its echoes in something like Rent?
Absolutely. Of course. I mean, just straight on with the title. I mean, Rent, Hair, there's no question. You know what I mean? There's a lot of strong connections to it.
It was many years, almost 30 years later, but Jonathan Larson's Rent, a musical stepchild, perhaps, of Hair.
How do you document real life when real life getting more like fiction each day? Headlines, breadlines blow my mind, and now this deadline, eviction or pay. Rent! How do you write a song when the chords sound wrong, though they once sounded right and rare? But the notes are sour, where is the power you once had to ignite?
Title track from the rock musical Rent, and we are talking about the 40th anniversary of the rock musical that began them all, Hair, which gets a series of concerts, free concerts, at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park. You have to pick up tickets in advance, though. Concerts tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday at 7 p.m. Details on our website, wnyc.org. Let's take a final phone call. Mike, who is in Washington Heights. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say that I was surprised that you talked about the Hair documenting the times. I believe it was you who said that. It wasn't a document at all. It was a commercialized version. The woman speaker, I'm sorry I didn't get the name, you know, talked about... the time, you know, hippies and the political involvement being commercialized later, but Hair was really the commercialization. And I was active in the 60s. I was active at that time, and it's really not much better than you'd expect from a Hollywood version attempting to show what was going on.
All right, well, let me ask Elizabeth Wollman from Baruch College to respond to that. Is that what you meant, Liz, when you were saying that there was some commercial aspect to this later on?
There was commercial aspect to it immediately, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, one might argue that there was commercial aspect to the movement immediately. I mean, Bill Graham and Jan Wenner came from that movement, and they were entrepreneurs as much as anybody else was. So James Rado and you, I mean, you can be part of a movement and still want to spread the word that results in commercialism. And yes, there was some dissent, I guess, from the left when Hair first opened that. I remember Jim Rado saying to me, I interviewed him years ago for the book, and he said that some people compared it sort of to Archie comics, and I suppose that anything that you're going to bring to a larger audience is going to get watered down to some extent if you want to sort of spread the word. But you know, I don't remember saying that it was ever authentic. I mean, you know what I mean? It was a slice of what was going on at the time, but that maybe not that that was Jim and Jerry's reaction to what was going on at the time. It was not necessarily representative of what everybody was doing at the time, right?
Well, and Jim, also, the you know, before Joe Papp decided to open his new theater with a six-week run of Hair, I mean, you guys, for something that was commercial, were not having much commercial success at all early on, right?
Not before we met Joe Papp, that's true. The New York the Broadway producers weren't interested in the script at all. But I wanted to say that Jerry and I really wanted to bring the message that we thought the hippie movement had. We wanted to bring that to the uptown public, a theater, because that was our, you know, our form of expression, our art form, if you will. And we really were moved by the hippie experience, the anti-war experience, and we felt most people didn't go to civil rights marches or the anti-war marches, or they didn't mingle with the hippies, and they didn't know what they were about, and we wanted to bring this message of peace and joy and hope and ecstasy, and, you know, most sincerely were interested in communicating that world to the other world.
Right, so not preaching to the choir, in fact, but taking the message, as you say, uptown. Now you are uptown. You're there at the Delacorte Theater right now. How's the production going?
It's going very, very well. It's an amazing, amazing group of actors, maybe one of the best groups we've had together ever. They're fantastic singers and actors, and the band, of course, is headed by Galt McDermott himself.
Who wrote the music, yes.
Yes, who wrote the music, and a fantastic band, and it's going to be a wonderful experience. It's a concert version, meaning the book has been cut down, the things that join the songs together, but the story is still told.
And it is being told three nights in a row, 40th anniversary concerts presented by the Public Theater at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park. They're all free tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday at 7 o'clock. You do need tickets ahead of time, and information on how to get them is on our website at WNYC.org. James Rado co-wrote the book and lyrics of Hair. Elizabeth Wollman wrote the book on rock musicals, literally. She's the author of The Theater Will Rock, a history of the rock musical from Hair to Hedwig. Jim, Liz, thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
It's been great. Thank you.
And in just a moment, we'll do something slightly different. And then on Monday, when a Broadway star falls ill, the show has to still go on. But in pop and classical concerts, things are a bit different. And on Monday, we'll look at why cancellations happen and how the fans react. Up next is the Welsh singer and songwriter Griff Rees, here to play songs from his new solo album called Candy Lion. That is next. This is Soundcheck.